Are you ready to lose weight? With Effecty, getting access to powerful GLP-1 weight loss medications has never been easier or more affordable. Effecty offers compounded semaglutide, the same active ingredients as the popular name brands, but for up to 80% less. These medications work by regulating appetite and blood sugar, helping you lose weight in a sustainable, science-backed way. Getting started is so simple. Just fill out a short medical questionnaire, then connect with a licensed provider through a quick chat-based telehealth consultation. If you're eligible, your prescription gets shipped straight to your door. No hassle, no waiting rooms. With transparent pricing, no hidden fees, and no membership required, Effecty is committed to making proven weight loss treatments accessible to everyone. Effecty gave me the opportunity to try their service out, and I have to say, it is just as easy as they say it is. I filled out the questionnaire, and within days, a package arrived at my door filled with everything I needed and detailed instructions. Their website also tells you everything you need to know, and you can always chat with your healthcare provider. It really is that simple and convenient. So if you're ready to level up your weight loss game, my listeners can now get $50 off of GLP-1 weight loss treatments at Effecty.com with code ATTWG at checkout. That's Effecty.com, EFFECTY.com, and use the code ATTWG to get $50 off your first month of GLP-1 weight loss treatment. No hassles, no memberships, and no hidden fees. So get started today. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice to text feature, and mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. no pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. A 22-year-old woman is 8 months pregnant and is supposed to be on bed rest. Instead, she called a friend and asked her to drive her around to run some errands. On May 3rd, 2017, Akia Eggleston went to several banks and ATMs and withdrew large sums of money. Then, all activity on her social media stopped. But it wouldn't be until 4 days later when Akia failed to show up to her own baby shower that her family would realize she was missing. Now, 4 years later, Akia and her baby are still missing, and Baltimore police don't have any answers. When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Akia Eggleston. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Everyone.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you so much for joining us once again. Before we get started, first, you know, we have a couple new members on Patreon, so we want to give them a shout out. Kay and Addison B. Thank you so much for your support.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. And again, if you'd like to support the show, you can do so over on patreon.com/ATTWGpod. I'd also like to take a second to talk about the last episode we released, which is a bonus episode on Gabby Petito. Gabby was on a cross-country hiking trip with her fiance, and she went missing. We're recording this on September 20th. On September 19th, authorities did say that they had found a body that had matched Gabby's description. So they did, you know, tell her family. They obviously made the announcement. You know, the forensic analysis isn't complete, but they're, you know, pretty sure it's her. So obviously that's an incredibly sad ending to this story.
Yeah. I mean, it's the ending that I think most of us kind of assumed what was going to happen, but we all hoped for a different outcome.
Yeah. And as of right now, Brian Laundrie is in the wind. So, you know, it's still important to keep this, you know, on the top of your mind and find where he is and hopefully, you know, bring him to authorities safely.
Yeah, because he's the one that has the answers.
He does. He does.
So as much as everybody wants some sort of justice for Gabby or vigilante justice for Gabby, it's more important to get him in to custody so that he can answer for what happened.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, anybody who is in the area of, well, Brian went missing in Florida. Mm-hmm. From Northport Police Department is the one that's handling his case there. They're doing searches. He could be anywhere because he's been missing almost a week. It'll be a week tomorrow.
Right.
I also wanted to talk about something that's very real that we have touched on, you know, on the show in the past that actually dovetails into this week's case, which is missing white woman syndrome. And a lot of people have been talking about that, you know, with Gabby, because there are a lot of folks that they're like, I don't understand why this is, you know, getting so much attention. And yes, missing white woman syndrome is real. Like, when you're pretty and you're white, you get more media attention. Like, that's been proven over and over again. In this particular case, I think it's also that the circumstances surrounding it were so odd.
I was going to say, it's the unique circumstances of the fact that he just, like, showed up at his parents' house without her, and then nobody reported her missing for, 11 days after that. So I think it's that definitely plays into it, the missing white woman syndrome. However, I think it's the bizarre circumstances of the case, especially when police went to question him and he immediately had a lawyer.
Right, right.
I mean, I think that's more what was captivating about this.
Yeah, and it's also important to... Yes, realize that not everybody gets equal amounts of coverage, and that's not okay. But that doesn't mean that she didn't deserve coverage, you know, because she was still somebody who was missing, and she had a family who was going out of their mind wondering where she was. So, you know, it's important to cover every case. And the reason why I said that dovetails into this week's episode is because this is the case of a woman who went missing under very weird circumstances, and she was 8 months pregnant, and it didn't get a lot of media attention. And a lot of people think that that's because Akia was a Black woman living in Baltimore, you know? So I really wanted to cover this case, and I actually started writing this before Gabby's story, you know, was happening. And it was actually inspired by another podcast that I've just started listening to. It's called Black Girl Gone. It's a great podcast. Like I said, I just started listening to it, but she covers missing and murdered Black women primarily. So she really does cover a lot of cases that aren't covered very widely. And I do think she also has an Akia Eggleston episode. So yeah, anyway, so that's kind of what inspired this. So let's tell her story.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Akia Shanta Eggleston was born on September 6th, 1994. She grew up in Maryland and dreamed of being a model and a dancer. Akia was a tiny girl. Now, it's so weird because, like, I read obviously a ton of things about her, and reports vary on her actual height, but they vary between 4'8" and 4'11".
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like, teeny tiny. Yeah. And she's, you know, about 100 pounds or so. So, like, just a tiny person.
So, like, Simone Biles size.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. And, you know, so I don't know a whole lot about her family life, just that she does have siblings. Her mother remarried when she was 5 to a man named Sean Wilkinson, and Sean raised Akia from that point. Like, he, you know, is her stepfather, but he's her dad. In 2012, when Akia was just 17 years old, her mother passed away from breast cancer.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, at the end of high school, it was obviously a devastating blow for her, but she buckled down and she finished high school. You know, she graduated, and her dad, Sean, like, talked about that, like, how it just, she was at such a transitional period in her life already, you know, with getting ready to finish high school. And then to have this happen was incredibly, incredibly difficult. But she, you know, she persevered and she got through as best as she could. After high school, she worked in retail. I couldn't get, like, a whole lot of details about, you know, what Akia did. But when she was about 20, she actually gave birth to her first daughter, Emery. Now,
love that name.
I know. Yeah. Isn't that nice? Yeah. I like that too. She and Emery's father didn't stay together, but they were both, you know, involved in her life. They were co-parenting. Akia ended up moving to the Cherry Hill neighborhood of Baltimore, but, you know, remained close with her stepfather, who was in Gaithersburg, Maryland, as well as her aunt and her grandmother, who also lived nearby. you know Maryland better than I do. How far is Gaithersburg from Baltimore?
Probably like an hour. Maybe.
Okay, that's what I was kind of thinking. Maybe more. I wasn't sure. Yeah.
It's pretty far away.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that makes sense. So they're close enough that like they're still able to function as a support system for her, but not necessarily somebody that you'd see every day.
Yeah, I was just going to say not necessarily a support system on a daily basis.
Right, right. And I do believe she also had siblings still in the area. So like her family still lived in Maryland, like they were around, but again, her moving to that Cherry Hill neighborhood, it sounds like did put, you know, a bit more physical distance between all of them.
And I know you brought up the stepfather, but what happened with her biological father? Do we know anything about him?
No.
Okay.
He's never come up in this, so I don't know if he was part of her life at all, but she considered Sean to be her dad, basically.
Okay.
Though Akia had people she could turn to, she also kept a lot of her life private. In late 2016, she became pregnant with her second child, but she didn't tell anyone in her family who the father was. Akia's grandfather, Eric Wilson, told Crime Watch Daily, quote, "She never discussed with us who the baby's father was. I didn't ask," end quote. While she was close with her family, like she was living her own life, you know, as a 22-year-old mother. She had this townhome in Baltimore that she shared with the roommate, and the roommate also had a small child. So when Akia would have Emery over, like there was this other little kid there to play with. So it, you know, seems like a pretty good setup.
Yeah, sounds ideal.
Yeah. And I don't know the exact custody details, like who had Emery, what percentage of the time, but it sounds like they split custody. And I do know that like Akia's family would help watch Emery too sometimes. So it just seems like they kind of made it work however they needed to make it work, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As Akia's due date grew nearer, her health problems grew. Her baby was breached and like honestly half her size already. I mean, she like pictures of her shortly before she went missing, like her belly is like her entire body.
Yeah, well, right, because when you're that small.
Yeah, like that baby did not have anywhere to go. So the baby was breached and she and her doctor had already scheduled a C-section for the end of May. Akia's doctor had also put her on bed rest, but according to her family, she wasn't very good at listening and staying off of her feet. Maybe it's because she was like 4'8 or whatever, but Akia was a spitfire and just like full of energy and couldn't stay still. She was also very social and took it upon herself to plan her own baby shower. Like she knew what she wanted. And so she was like, I'm just going to get this done.
Go for it, you know?
Like, yeah. Like she had relatives and friends, you know, helping out, like setting up and, you know, stuff like that. But she's the one who took the initiative and booked the venue and even put down a $900 deposit.
Wow.
Yeah. The baby shower is also going to be a gender reveal. So she was going big.
All out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Akia had been in regular contact with her friends and family who are helping her put on this baby shower, and she was a big social media user. Her Facebook page is still up, and a lot of her posts are public, and she was usually posting daily and sometimes multiple times a day. And I can only imagine that as she became more pregnant and like just simply walking became difficult for her, that she probably spent a lot of time scrolling through social media.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, if she was ordered on bed rest, like she's probably bored out of her skull.
Yeah. And her friend was saying like she really was like she could barely walk like at that point. Because she was ostensibly on bed rest, I don't believe she was working at this time, you know, toward the end of her pregnancy.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where her income was coming from, though. I've read that she had worked in retail, like I mentioned, but I don't know, like, when she had to stop doing that because of the pregnancy. I also read that she may have gotten some money when her mother passed away, But it sounds like that may have been more like life insurance than an inheritance. So I don't know that she still had any money from that, or if that all just went to, you know, funeral expenses and things like that.
Right.
But I bring this up because money comes into play in this story. As I mentioned before, Akia put down a $900 deposit on the venue for her baby shower. And that's not an insignificant amount of money, especially to a 22-year-old single mother.
I mean, look, I wouldn't want to spend $900 on a baby shower. And, you know, we're in totally different circumstances. Well,
no, and also, this is a deposit. So, you know, presumably she would be getting that back, I guess. Or at least part of it. I don't really know how it worked, but like, I was a 30-year-old single mother, and I would have been hard pressed to come up with $900 just in general.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
like, I wouldn't spend $900 on a baby shower.
Well, regardless of what it's for, I would have just had a hard time getting $900. Period. But you know, like maybe IKEA was just better with money than I was. Like I don't know.
You and I are both terrible with money, so yeah. That's not outside of the realm of possibilities.
So Akia's baby shower was going to be on May 7th. On May 3rd, her grandmother tried calling her a bunch of times, but she didn't answer. So she texted her and was like, is your phone dead? And Akia texted back and said that, no, it wasn't dead, but she couldn't talk. Now, Akia's grandmother, looking back, doesn't think that that was her. She thinks that somebody had her granddaughter's phone.
Okay, so when was that? You said May...
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Yeah, 4 days before the baby shower.
And when did her friend take her?
May 3rd.
And that was the last time anybody actually saw her?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's May 7th, the day of the baby shower. Akia's friend, Cece Diaz, was one of the people who had helped set up for the party. So Akia's family is there, her friends are there, the food is there, like the decorations are up, but there's no Akia. So everyone waits around and then they start calling and texting, of course, but the calls go straight to voicemail. Although this does seem alarming, no one is insanely worried at this point because like they're concerned, but they think that the most likely scenario is that she went into labor and doesn't have her phone with her.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Well, exactly, because she was like real pregnant, you know, and this was a high risk pregnancy. So that especially makes sense if we're talking like an emergency C-section or something like that. She's not going to have her phone in the OR. So they started calling around to hospitals because that's the thing. They don't know where she was. Like, was she at home? Was she on her way to where the party was? Was she somewhere else? So they are just kind of calling to all of the hospitals in the area to see if she came in to have the baby. But that turned up nothing. So eventually a group of them went to Akia's house. And that's when they realize that something insane has happened. Not only is Akia not home, but neither is her stuff. All of her personal possessions are gone. All of her daughter's stuff is gone too. At this point, friends and family really don't know what to think.
Do we know where Emery is?
Yeah, so Emery wasn't with her at the time. So Emery, I don't know where she was, but Emery is wherever she was supposed to be that day, whether it was with her father or with Akia's aunt or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where's the roommate with her small child?
Well, yeah. So I don't know if the roommate was home at that point, but the roommate does either she was home at that point or she came back, you know, soon after because they do talk to her. Yeah. So, but they're all kind of over at this house, like incredibly confused because it's not like she just packed a few bags and left. Like, large items are missing. Like, a crib is gone. And again, Akia could barely walk at this point, so she wasn't moving a crib on her own. And, you know, everybody's standing there, like, all of her family and friends who are invited to this baby shower, presumably, you know, the same people who she would ask for help if she needed to move. They're all standing there looking at each other going, like, I didn't help her. Did you? Did you know about this? And nobody did. Plus, she didn't even own a car. So, like, how would she have moved any of this stuff? So, unsurprisingly, this is when they call the police.
Yeah. I mean, like, this is screaming something bigger than just an abduction.
Yeah, well, you would think, but the Baltimore PD was not extremely interested.
Because she was an adult.
I mean, I guess, because according to CC Diaz, that friend, they waited at the apartment for hours and no one showed up.
Hmm.
So they went down to the police station, but they still didn't have much luck. CC told reporter Claudia Rivero that police said, quote, maybe she's depressed. Maybe she just ran away, end quote. Yes, a bedridden 8.5-month pregnant woman with no car and a big planned party, you know, that always happens. It's that old story of you plan a big party, you put down a $900 deposit, you don't own a car, you're on bed rest, and you pick that time to just start a new life. We've all heard that one. But like, what I don't understand, I mean, again, she's clearly in a medically fragile situation. And typically, that's what does get police to actually pay attention.
Right. Yeah. That, I mean, you know, sarcasm aside, she's medically endangered.
Yeah.
Like, that should elevate her to critical missing because of her health concerns.
So when the police are like, maybe she ran away, I mean, CC is like, okay, well, this is extremely stupid. And, you know, she went on to tell that reporter, quote, we know her condition and that girl could barely walk, end quote. But the point is, despite Akia's fragile medical condition, BPD did not initially take this case seriously. And unfortunately, I don't know how much time was lost with all of this nonsense, but eventually they finally did get on the case for real. So at some point, and again, I've never been able to find like a solid timeline of when the investigation actually started.
Mm-hmm.
But when it did, they, you know, did their own search of the apartments and started interviewing people. And of course, one of the first people that they talked to was the roommate.
I would hope so.
Right. And so they're like, hey, what's up with all this like emptiness? What's going on? And the roommate said, oh, yeah, she was moving out. According to detectives, the roommate showed them several text messages between her and Akia that talked about how Akia was going to move out and live with her baby's father. She was supposed to be gone by May 10th.
And do we know when this text message exchange occurred?
No, that has not been public. And what's really frustrating is that they haven't made anything else about this public, meaning like we don't know if the baby's father ever came over to the apartment, you mm-hmm. know, like if the roommate had met him before. We don't know if he ever helped Akia move, you know, some of those belongings out, or if the roommate was even home when any of that happened, if she even saw any of the stuff being moved. Like, we just don't know. I mean, for all we know, she just came home one day and all of Akia's things were gone. Like, no idea.
Yeah. Because I'd be curious as to when those text messages.
Yeah, like if they started on May 3rd.
On the 3rd, right. Yeah,
exactly. And I don't know. I mean, again, I'm assuming the police know the answers to all this. I'm hoping, but I don't know. Once they start investigating this as an actual missing persons case, the police start to put together a timeline. Akia stopped posting on her Facebook page on April 28th. Her grandmother said she was texting with her on May 3rd, but again, she's not convinced that was actually her. But police eventually find proof that Akia was alive and well on May 3rd. So they find the friend who says that Akia asked her to give her a ride on May 3rd. This person took Akia to a Royal Farms, which is a gas station, to use an ATM, and a BB&T bank to cash a cashier's check. Akia also allegedly went to other banks to pick up different checks. All that has been said of these checks is that they were coming from different people in different places. Don't know anything more. I just know that the BB&T one was for, I believe, $572.
So she's collecting relatively large sums of money, cashing shit in to what?
Well, I
to
mean,
what end? Are we thinking that this is real, that she could have like picked up?
Well, they don't. Yeah, at this point, they don't know what to think. And it does kind of fit with like, OK, if you're planning on moving, maybe you're kind of gathering money together for that.
Sure.
You know, for rent, for security deposit, you know, for whatever.
Yeah.
They don't know what to think. But they do find out that the friend drove a Kia home around 2 or 3 that afternoon. And that is the last time anybody says that they saw her. Police were able to corroborate this story via security footage from that BB&T branch. In it, Akia is seen with a bright green top and yoga pants. Like, she's not acting under duress or concerned or, you know, anything. It's just a completely normal trip to the bank. But this footage is the last known sighting of Akia Eggleston. Police also tried to pull surveillance footage from her apartment, but surprise, surprise, the camera was broken.
Oh, I mean, it is Baltimore.
Yeah. They also pulled MTA footage to see if she had gotten on any buses, but the bank footage is the only footage that they were ever able to find. Now, obviously, the next person police want to talk to is the father of Akia's child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Problem was, no one knew who he was.
Mm.
So I don't actually know how long it took them to get that information. I do hope it was soon, though, because according to Cece Diaz, that friend I mentioned earlier, she was the only one who knew his identity. And it sounds like she was among the people who originally went to police. So I'm like hoping that was one of the first things that she told them.
One would hope.
Right. Now, police have never publicly named this man, nor have they publicly named him as a suspect or even a person of interest. But Cece has named him, and so has Akia's dad, Sean. According to Cece, this man is her cousin, Andre Michael Robinson. But I'm not sure if he and Akia met through Cece, because in addition to being Cece's cousin, he was Sean's, Akia's stepfather's, childhood friend.
Oh, okay. So older.
So he old. Yeah.
Okay.
Red flag number one.
Yeah.
Red flag number two. Dude never came forward to be like, oh my God, this woman who I'm having a baby with is missing. What can I do to help? Now, one of our most common refrains on the show is that you don't know how you're going to act in a situation like this, but like you have to at least acknowledge the situation. Like, this isn't okay. I mean, that's your baby out there somewhere.
Yeah.
There are a lot more red flags. I'm going to stop numbering them because, you know, my major was made up by JMU, so I can't count that high. But here's some more info on this guy. He had other children with at least one other woman. I've read conflicting accounts as to whether or not they were together at this time.
Hmm.
But either way, this lady and Akia knew each other, and they were not fans. According to Cece, this woman had been sending Akia harassing text messages prior to her disappearance. In addition, Robinson never reached out to his old friend Sean or helped with any of the searches.
So did the police question her?
Yes, eventually.
Okay.
At some point, I don't know exactly when, but yes, both of them have been questioned by police. Now, anytime Sean is interviewed, he of course is asked if he's reached out to Robinson, but he says that police have advised him not to. So to this day, 4 years after Akia's disappearance, I'm not sure that the two have spoken, because Robinson certainly didn't reach out to Sean.
Yeah, and the reason why the police would say that is because they would basically want to catch him in a lie.
Right.
And they wouldn't want her father giving him information that is privy to the case that, you know, the general public wouldn't know about.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's clearly they don't want Sean to accidentally compromise the investigation.
Right.
And I get that. And I think he gets that too, you know?
Yeah.
So like I said, police did question Andre and his current slash ex-girlfriend, but while they weren't officially cleared, neither were they named as suspects.
I mean, that's bizarre to me. They're the only ones that have motive.
Right. Like, a lot of motive, it would seem,
yeah.
You know? But then 6 months after her disappearance, something else strange happened. In October of 2017, family and friends held a vigil for Akia and her baby outside of her apartment. Afterwards, as they were cleaning up, they found something in the bushes. Akia's bank card. Now, this is 6 months later. Like, family has looked around. Police have done searches. But no one has ever seen this bank card. And it's described in the article I read as having been in the bushes. But, like, these people were cleaning up after a prayer vigil, you know? So I don't think they were going that hard in the bushes. Like, I don't think they were digging around, you know what I mean?
Right.
And Akia's stepfather, Sean, also said that it didn't look like it had been outside for 6 months. So they don't think it had been out there the entire time, which then begs the question, like, was it planted? And if so, why?
Yeah, I would... think that it would be somebody trying to get rid of evidence, but why would you do it
at her apartment?
At her vigil.
Yeah.
At her apartment. Like, that seems absurd to me.
I know. It's just such, I just don't understand either how it could have been missed for 6 months or why somebody would have planted it. Like, nothing makes sense about it.
So did they turn it over to the police?
Yes, they
did.
Was
it fingerprinted?
Yeah, I assume so. Police haven't specifically said that. But yes, police do have it and just wouldn't say anything more about it, basically.
Did they get a list of people that were at the block party? I mean, you know, I know none of this is going to be put out there, but that's just where my head is.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The last time Akia's cell phone pinged was in the Inner Harbor area near one of the banks that she visited. Police believe she was actively moving on May 3rd, meaning, like, they think that at least some of those belongings were removed on that day. So it really does seem like she thought she was getting ready to start her new life with the father of her child. We know who this man is. Akia's friend says that the man's girlfriend or ex-girlfriend had been harassing Akia. Police have spoken to both of them. But over 4 years have passed, and police don't seem to be any closer to solving her case today than they were when they first reported her missing. So this is what really struck me once people started talking about, like, Gabby's case this past week and, you know, why is she getting so much attention? I'm thinking about the weird circumstances around it, but this is really weird too, you know? And the thing with Gabby's case as well, which is similar here, is that, you know, she was with her fiance. The fiance kind of came back alone, didn't report her missing, didn't search for her, nothing. And in Akia's case, We don't know for sure that she was with Andre Michael Robinson when she went missing, but she went missing. He didn't report her missing. He didn't help search for her. Nothing. You know, you have these two very clear suspects in these cases. And in Akia Eggleston's case, it's been 4 years and nothing.
There's so much to this. Even beyond Andre, like, in my mind, the roommate would still be a person of interest too. You know,
so police have said that she's not. Like, police have come out and said that she's not. That
they said the same thing about Andre.
Well, no. They didn't say that he was not a person of interest. They just didn't say that he was. So the two people in this that police have said that they've, like, talked to and have basically, like, cleared, although they didn't say the word cleared, were the roommate and the friend who gave Akia the ride.
It just seems like there's a lot that they're missing.
I mean, there has to be, right?
Like, yeah.
How does an 8.5 month pregnant woman with a bunch of cash, like, just disappear.
Yeah. I mean, and especially in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like there's a whole lot of places to hide bodies in Baltimore. Most bodies are found in Baltimore, you know?
Well, yeah. But, and so they have done searches over the years of, you know, what they've called wooded areas.
Yeah, but what about Andre's house, his apartment, wherever?
I have no idea.
His girlfriend, maybe ex-girlfriend, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Why was she pulling out all this cash?
Right.
You know, there's so much that's unanswered.
It is. And I
get it. It's Baltimore's practice to not reveal anything, which is insanely infuriating.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore PD just has a general mistrust of the media, and they don't release any information on anything. We've talked about this in missing persons cases. Like, I understand you have to keep some information close to the vest, but like, you can't keep everybody in the dark.
Well, right. And that's Sean's biggest complaint. He has expressed his displeasure with the Baltimore Police Department, lamenting that they didn't take Akia's case seriously at first and wasted valuable time. He's also complained about their lack of communication.
Yeah, I mean, they might be doing a fucking bang-up job on the investigation at this point, but, you know, if you don't communicate certain things, especially to the family members, like, you lose them.
Right. And yeah, he was on The View one time, and he was like, I have to jump through hoops just to get anyone there to talk to me.
Yeah, and a missing person is not the same as a homicide investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that they're probably thinking, especially now it's 4 years later,
yeah,
that, you know, it's probably going to turn into a homicide investigation. However, it's not right now, and perhaps sharing in some information would have helped earlier in the investigation in finding her.
Right. It isn't, though, just the lack of communication from BPD. Sean also says that Akia lived in a very tight-lipped area of Baltimore, and people around there didn't take kindly to strangers coming around and asking questions. But, you know, it's been 4 years. A woman and her child are missing, and another child is growing up without the mother she loved. You know, somebody out there knows something, and if they haven't come forward yet, like, you gotta come forward, you know, strangers asking questions or not.
Right.
It's so frustrating because in the past 4 years, like, yes, I was able to find news stories on this, but nothing from the beginning of her case. You know, this was not a case that was covered when it was actually happening. All of the stories that you see are like, it's a year later and Akia Eggleston is still missing. Now, on the second anniversary, Akia Eggleston's father says, hoobity booby doo boo. Not only did BPD not take this seriously, neither did the media at first. And it's mind-blowing to me. Again, 8.5 months pregnant, gone under very shady circumstances with a very clear suspect. And it was crickets. So yes, missing white woman syndrome is real. It absolutely is. And sometimes people like Akia Eggleston fall through the cracks because of it. But she doesn't deserve to fall through the cracks. Her baby doesn't deserve to fall through the cracks, certainly. So we just need to continue, even though we're 4 years too late, we need to continue to amplify her story and, you know, make sure that people know her name. I'm going to leave you this week with a post that Sean made in the Missing Akia Eggleston Facebook group. He posted this just a few weeks ago on September 6th, which was her 27th birthday. He signed it like he does all of his posts, as a grieving father. Quote, good morning. The rain has ended and the sun is shining on today. I wanted to say happy birthday, sweetheart. You are truly missed, and I and the family are still keeping you and the baby boy in our deepest prayers. We are still fighting for your return every chance possible. There are no words to describe these days since you have been gone. I try to laugh with your daughter as she is growing up without you. I cry deep inside because I do not know where you are and if you're okay. Will no one speak on your behalf? What happened to you? Will anyone step forward from the community? Is there a friend who knows more than they are saying? Did you confide in someone who knows the truth? What is the one thing the police are missing that can bring you home? Have the police absolutely spoken to everyone they could have? Have they really put the vice down on those who have information? Please, God, release us from this bondage. It hurts way too deep. Loss is part of life, but the not knowing is what keeps the fight alive. Again, wishing you a happy birthday, baby girl. Hope to see you soon. A grieving father. End quote.
That's crushing.
Yeah. Akia Shanta Eggleston has been missing since May 3rd, 2017. She was between 4'8" and 4'11" and was wearing a green t-shirt and black yoga pants at the time of her disappearance. Akia has a tattoo of two cherries on her left shoulder and a tattoo of the name Emery on her right bicep. She was 8 months pregnant. Akia was 22 years old when she disappeared. She would be 27 today. Her baby would be four. There's a $25,000 reward for information about her case. So if you do have any information on Akia's disappearance, please contact Maryland Crime Stoppers at 1-866-7-LOCKUP. You can also contact the FBI's Baltimore Field Office at 410-265-8080 or the Baltimore City Police Department at 410-396-2499. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Conan Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Conan Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why My Lowe's Rewards members get a free paint or exterior stain sample to test your look and find the perfect color to confidently refresh your space. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid in-store only, 5/8 through 5/14. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See associate for details. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.